And welcome, everybody, to another Bangers and Classics podcast. That's with me, James Rupper, and him, David Malloy. And what's David been up to?
Well, unfortunately, I've not been recovering from a hangover from the Bangers and Classics first anniversary party.
Oh, right, yeah, that was
because we didn't have a party, James. Well,
didn't we? I don't know where I was then. I had a break of time.
Yeah, well, you were probably at the retirement home for Hammer Horror Actresses again, because you spent all of our party funds by donating it to them.
Well, they need it, David. Very, very important work, very important missionary work going on there.
Yeah, I had a long list of guests I had to phone up and say, you can't come to the party. Yeah. We're skint. James has spent all the money.
Yeah.
But there we go. I mean, poor old Roland, he would have been along as well last week and, you know, with the cancel it. Never mind. But on the car front, I have seen a classic car this week.
Oh, that's good.
It's a new one. Well, I saw two, but the first one is a new one to me. It's a Volvo 240 Estate. Dating from about 1988, 87 or 88, judging by the registration number. And it was parked in a driveway and looked to be in good condition. And I know somebody who knows the owner, we'll come back to that. So yeah, that was one that was looked to be in use, possibly off the road on Sorna just now, I don't know. But it gave the impression of being a car that is taken out and driven at least part of the year. And then I saw the Bentley Mulsanne again. It's a little bit more crinkly around the edges than I first suspected, though, I have to say. So I don't know if it's actually being used.
Mm.
So those were my car spots this week. What about you?
Well, I saw a Rolls-Royce Shadow that wasn't in wedding white. It was one of those proper ones. It was sort of black over silver. It was really, really classy. And that was quite exciting. I don't mind those. And strangely enough, they're sort of smaller, again, than you first imagined them. Because obviously when you first saw them, they were huge things. And everything around it was small. But now they're sort of quite quaint things, aren't they?
I drove a Silver Spirit once. Mm. And there ain't a lot of leg room in it, let me tell you, or head room.
No, there's not. There isn't.
No, you'd be amazed. But it is like driving your armchair. Yeah, very much like that.
No, that's right. Nothing wrong with that. So that was good. And then actually a black Mercedes SL disappearing into the distance. It was an SL, but it did have a hard top on it. I couldn't catch up to see whether it was a 500 or a 450 or whatever. But that was a very nice thing to see. And again, these things are being used in February in Britain, which, you know, hats off to those people for doing it, which is really, really good. Mm. Whilst we're here, I'll just say to you, it's probably going to be a week late, but I am actually quoted in Her Majesty's Spectator magazine. So, yeah, strange enough, because a friend of mine said, oh, you're in the Spectator. Am I? Well, actually, yeah, I did speak to a journalist who is a good friend, old Martin Gurdon, a couple of weeks ago, but it sort of came out quite quicker. So, yeah, I'm quoted on there extensively, and they do give my website a plug, which is very good of them. I think you can catch it online. You might have to register to see it. But certainly last week's Spectator, if you've got it, you don't see me, but you see me quoted. So that's what my life has come to, really. People, Her Majesty's Spectator come to me for quotes about crappy old cars, but there you
right.
go.
Do they mention the podcast?
No, they don't, David.
Oh, well, that is no use.
There's a limited amount that I can say, you know, I have to pump my own stuff.
You need a better agent, James, let's be honest.
Well, I need an agent at all. Yeah.
That's it. Yes, well, there we go. Quoted in Spectator magazine.
There you
yes.
go. That's right, yeah.
Yeah. Can't think of the last place I was quoted.
No.
I was once quoted in a French car magazine, but that's...
Oh, you really?
Yeah, this was long before I ever took up a pen or wrote about cars. I was at a Matra event, the Matra Passion, which is a French car club, annual general meeting at Clermont-Ferrand. Actually, the locus was where the Michelin tire test site, the test track, and various test tracks, and we got to drive part of it, etc. But at lunchtime, I was sitting, and I have to say the lunch was excellent. It was the Michelin work canteen. Now, I don't know if they did the catering, but I don't know who did, but it was the best works canteen food I've ever had in my life.
Yeah.
This was superb. And sitting next to a French chap, and he said, you're not going to have any wine. I said, no, I'm going to be driving on the track later in the day. And he sort of nudges me and says, look around. They're all going to be driving on it as well. I'm not endorsing that kind of behavior, let me say that, but but that was how it was. Anyway, he was chatting away about various things. Didn't know who he was. And a few weeks later, back home, and a chap called Will Faulkner, whose brother Tom Faulkner runs, or used to run, I don't know if he still does, Claremont Corvettes.
Mm.
But Will deals in Matra Spears. And I was talking to Will, he said, "Oh, you were in a French magazine." I said, "No, I wasn't." "Yeah, you were. I've got it here." So he sent me a copy. It turned out the guy that I'd been talking to was a journalist for La Vida Lotto, who quoted me extensively and knew nothing about it. That was the first time it ever appeared in a magazine, I think, was quoted, was then. A long, long time ago. I was only about 12. I was only about 12 at the time. So why?
Yeah,
was,
of course
why
you was, David. Absolutely. Yeah.
Why I was driving, I don't know. Mm. But yes. So I was telling you about finding out about the Volvo.
Yeah.
I mentioned finding out a little bit more about the Volvo. The same day, I bumped into a couple of friends of mine. I told you before about these lads. They run a hotel in Ayr, and one of them is a couple of Peugeot 106 rallies. So I was chatting to them, and one of them mentioned, "Oh, I know who owns that car." Didn't go into details because I didn't really want to. It's not, it's not for public consumption, obviously. But the other lad, whose name I won't mention either, it's not really fair, is in the process of buying a Volkswagen Beetle.
Hmm.
And he is an old classic Beetle, I might add. He is thoroughly excited about it. He's looking forward to taking the engine out, having the gearbox reconditioned, etc. And that, to me, I suppose, is the mark of a real enthusiast.
Mm, yeah.
Wouldn't you say so?
Yeah, I would say.
Yeah, right. But it'll go along with this 2106 rallies very nicely. Another news, I got an email from another friend who just bought a car. It wasn't a brand new one. It used to be a very nice car. And I asked him how it was, because the previous car he'd bought wasn't really very comfortable. He's like me, he's about 6'3", and couldn't really get comfortable in the one he bought. So he sold it and traded it in very quickly for another car. So I said, "How's the car?" And I got quite a lengthy email from him. "You'd have loved this, James. This is how a car road test should read." He told me all the things you needed to know about the car. It's comfortable, how it steers. The only criticism was it was a little bit wide for some of the narrower streets in the town. But all the information that a buyer would have wanted was contained in that email. That's how car reports for modern cars should be written, I reckon.
Yes, absolutely.
It's not about the quality of plastics. Oh, the plastics are a bit flimsy or they're a little bit too brittle. Frankly, who cares?
Well, that's right. It actually isn't about the person writing it, which is another problem that you get with these reviews as well.
Yeah, you want to know about the product, and this was all about the car.
Yeah.
And so I commended them on it. I don't suppose they'll take up a career in writing about cars for the simple reason that the opportunity wouldn't arise for someone to actually write what's important instead of...
Well, that's right. And also the fact that there's no money in it, David. That's the main reason for not writing about cars. You would be better off digging a ditch, actually. You'd earn more money.
Well, funnily enough, I just dug three last week. Yeah. Well, no, not actually, no. No, I couldn't be trusted to do that, let's be honest, old boy.
It is quite difficult.
It is. So is there any news from your part of the world, anything you want to bring up and ventilate in the podcast this week?
The only thing, David, is the sad passing of T.J. O'Rourke, who was an American writer of some distinction. And he liked cars, and that's one of the main reasons for mentioning him. His dad actually owned a dealership, and so he had sort of... quite a lot of inside info on all that, but really he was a political writer. He was a Republican, and he was just really funny. I think he used to write for National Lampoon years ago. But the quality of his books is just outstanding, really. So if you want to read anything, I can highly recommend. There is a very car specific book which I think came out in 2009, which is Driving Like Crazy. But his early stuff is great. I mean, I've got Hot Holidays in Hell. I remember reading Eat the Rich and P.J. O'Rourke. Yeah, Give War a Chance. Very good titles for some of these. And actually, one of the titles, David, is you're like is Don't Vote, It Just Encourages the Bastards. And that's actually the title of a book, whether that's very encouraging.
It's kind of my motto.
It is. Yeah, that's right. So, yeah, if you've never heard of him, and not everybody has, he's worth sorting out. He also has the most famous quote, which I don't know if you've ever heard, David, about rental cars. And I won't use an American accent. I will just bore you with, what is actually this is the definitive sort of car advice. If anyone says, what's the best car to have, it's actually this. He said, nothing handles better than a rentaled car. You can go faster, turn corners sharper, and put the transmission into reverse while going forward at a higher rate of speed in a rented car than in any other kind. You can also park without looking, and you can use the trunk as an ice chest. Another thing about a rented car is that it's an all-terrain vehicle. Mud, snow, water, woods, you can take a rented car anywhere. True, you can't always get it back, but that's not your problem, is it? So there you go. That's the definitive view on what the best car is to actually own. It's a rental. Right. So there you go. But yeah, I like him. You won't waste time reading his books. There's excellent stuff about politics in it. And yeah, there's loads of them to choose from. And I think you'll enjoy them. But he liked cars. He's one of us.
Right. So not PJ Proby then?
Not PJ Proby. No, PJ Proby used to sing in the style of Elvis pretty much. But he spent all his time in the UK, and mostly he was splitting his velvet trousers. And that was a bit of a scandal at the time. But I don't know whether that PJ liked cars or not. But yeah, he was a good singer.
PG Tips, what about him?
PG Tips. Well, yeah, if you can hum it, I can play it, as the old chimps used to say.
We had this conversation by email a couple of days ago when I had to admit I really didn't have much knowledge of PJ O'Rourke. I would say, however, that he missed out one thing in relation to rental cars.
Mm.
He's forgetting the fact that certain minicab drivers can drive cars for more miles than anybody else on the planet with see the oil pressure.
Well, that's right. But and there's also van drives, isn't there? I mean, vans are actually the fastest vehicles on Earth. But there you go. That's another road you can go down.
Well, indeed it is, yes. Yeah. Have to be damn quick to go down it to keep up with those guys.
Yeah.
And on that shocking note, we'll take a quick break.
You're listening to the Bangers and Classics podcast, where it's always 1980.
Well, we're back after a bit. It took a little bit longer than usual because James just ripped his velvet trousers. So I think he was dancing to a PJ Proby record. Is that right, James?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Right, anyway, we shall move on, and no more of my nonsense this week. Well, for now, with this week's Banger or Classic. And it's kind of related to singing and dancing. It's a car known as the Disco. It's the Land Rover Discovery Mark I, which came out in, I believe, 1989. Is it a banger, a classic, or is it something else?
Well, it was a very cheap way to buy a Range Rover at the time, because basically what you got underneath was a Range Rover. Just got a different body on top. So that was it, really. And obviously it was a bit cheaper. But actually, I rather like them. As an owner of a Discovery 2, I don't like those at all. Those are terrible vehicles, and they should all be destroyed. But the Mark I Discovery was pretty okay, actually. It took them a while to add extra doors, but the original logos on the side were really nice as well. The compass stuff, wasn't it? It was all over them. But it was a pretty good vehicle. It sort of did what it was supposed to do, and it was Land Rover sorting out their range, really. Their range now is a complete mess of models that I barely understand. But I think we understood this. And this was still a vehicle that actually farmers would buy and use, which is not something that happens today with any Land Rover at all. The Land Rover Discovery in its original form was a pretty good vehicle. And it's just one of those things that it got more complicated as time got on, when maybe it should have stayed a bit more basic. But yeah, I like it. And my view would be it's a classic these days, because again, you don't see them around.
Right. Well, I mean, obviously, I think it was a nod towards the original Range Rover.
Yeah.
Sorry, one thing the Range Rover has done is moved ever more that market.
Yeah.
What went away from a fairly utilitarian mud plugger with some on-road ability is now just a gin palace on wheels that you can, if you so desire, drive through a muddy field to local Gymkhana.
Yeah.
But back in 89, the Discovery used, as you say, the Range Rover platform to make a cheaper version that hailed back to a degree to the original purpose of the Range Rover. Obviously, the design team had looked at a Matro Rancho before coming up with it.
Most likely.
Basically, you've got a roof line that apes to a degree the Matro Rancho.
Yeah. That's also there, isn't it? Because the seats at the back are higher so that you have a better view out for the rear passengers.
Yeah.
There's a bit more headroom, yeah.
True enough, but it's fairly obvious where they get the idea from, I think. It must have been the consciousness at some point, one would have thought. The other thing was you could get it briefly with a four-cylinder engine, which wasn't a great idea, let's be honest. And it couldn't pull the skin off a rice pudding. You could have three-door models originally. Then there was a five-door came in, which was obviously a lot more versatile. Nominally a five-seater, but there were rear seats as well you could add to make it a seven-seater. So a fairly versatile vehicle. Not tremendously well built, if we're being absolutely honest. Not terribly reliable, which that was the bugbears of it. And it was affordable for the type of vehicle, but for the sort of money you were paying for one, you would have been entitled to expect a car that had superior reliability to that offered by it. I suppose you've got to say it's a classic. It's not something I've ever really aspired to in any sense. Never really fancied one, but that's not the point of this. It did its job. It could have done its job a little bit better with better build quality, but there you have it. As it goes, we'll have to call it a classic, I think.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
I think move so. On. Sue, we've got a challenge this week.
Are we?
No, I just made that up.
Oh, okay.
I made that up, James, because we're not actually having a challenge now, because obviously, you know, after you getting beaten by Roland last week, you let the side down so badly.
Yeah, but Roland was clearly better, so well done to Roland, I say.
Yes, but even so, I mean, we can't have that sort of thing. People coming onto the podcast and showing us up for the idiots that we obviously are.
But we are, isn't it? That's just a confirmation that you could get a pair of chimps to do this job, and they'd probably make a pretty good job of it, actually.
Well, we know that, but even so. Anyway, the challenge for this week was to find an 80s coupe from Japan, which cost £7,500 or less. Yeah. Obviously, the rarer the better. I think I've got a really good one this week.
Well, you say that, David. I don't know what it is, so I wouldn't know.
Well, I wanted to go for an AutoZam AZ1.
Yeah.
A little K car with gullwing doors.
Yeah.
Only ever came here as a grey import. But my hopes of finding one for that sort of money were very quickly dashed. The available ones were all considerably more expensive than £7,500. But nice looking little car, if you can find one. And you've got that sort of money. Yeah, great. You can drive it around. Easy to park because it's about the length of a dining room table, basically. Yeah. But we couldn't have one of those, so I looked for something else. And I thought, we'll go for something with multiple cylinders. And I went for a Mitsubishi FTO.
Oh, yeah, I know those.
Ah, well, I found a good one. This one is a 1995 model. It's got the Mivec 2-litre V6 engine, which I believe turns out 197 brake horsepower, or if you prefer, 200 PS. It's silver. It looks in extremely good condition. It's MOT till February of next year. There's no advisories, and in fact, the MOT history itself, I had a good look at it, shows a very clean bill of health. There's very few advisories over the years. This has obviously been a car that's been pretty well looked after. And it's a fairly low mileage. The mileage is still under 70,000. And the seller hasn't spared the expense on it. The advert says it's a new alloys. I'm not keen on the style of the alloys, I have to say. But there we have it. It's got new alloys and new tyres. It's got high-performance wheel-wood brakes. Obviously a good thing. You want to be able to stop. Something I'm not so keen on is a loading kit bought from Japan. And our roads, you can't really run cars too low. So that's a bit of a negative for me. But I'm sure you can flip that off and put it back to standard. And there's a very attractive-looking new leather interior, which he says cost him the best part of £1,000, and a good Alpine stereo system. So that's all good and well. Everything looks really nice. As I say, the one downside being the loading kit, but I'm sure we could deal with that. It's got a Tiptronic gearbox, so you can drive it in automatic or manual mode. Again, I'd probably prefer a full manual version, but it is what it is. And for this car, which they say has got a really good history, it looks in very good condition, it's been very well cared for, the seller is asking the princely sum of £4,500 or near offer. That sounds to me like a very good buy for an attractive coupe with a V6 engine. What do you reckon, James?
I thought we were doing 1980s cars, David. I know
Oh, I did. Yeah, I forgot. Yeah, I went off on a tangent yet again and jumped to bought a 95 one.
But that's okay. I don't mind too much.
It was just so attractive. I had to buy it.
Well, that's okay. I quite like FTOs. I think they're quite.
Yeah, I was trying to find a 1980s K car. I couldn't find one, and then being a bit short of time, I thought, ah, an FTO, I'll go for that. Besides, anyway, as we all know in this podcast, rules are there for the guidance of wise men and the obedience of fools. I know I've forfeited the challenge, but what the heck? It is actually a nice car. You'll find it in Car and Classic. And if it's not being sold, it's certainly one to consider, I would say.
Right.
What about you? What have you come up with? Well, having obeyed the rules?
I actually stayed in the 1980s, David, because that's where the instruction came for me to stay. So that's what I did. And I'm in 1984. That was a very good year. I did enjoy 1984. I could live that on repeat, actually, but there you go. And what I found was a Honda Accord EX. Now, you could have a bit of a debate there. Is this a fastback? Is it a sporting hatchback? But it is a coupe. It has two doors, has a sloping rear, and it's a Honda Accord from 1984. It's the same price as yours. It's 4,500, and it's one of those showroom style examples. You know, there's a few little bits on it, loads of pictures. There's a tiny little bit of paintwork I can see, but on the whole, this is a car you will just never see anywhere at all. It's right-hand drive. It's a UK car, and I just think it's quite nice. It's 1.8 petrol, so it's not quick or anything. But you'll just look extremely cool in it, and everybody will look at you twice because they have no idea what it actually is. And it's a Honda Accord. I love Honda Accords. I love Hondas. The number of letters and emails I've had over the years with people saying they've done 3 million miles in their Honda Accord. Is quite remarkable, so it's not going to let you down. And I just think it's a very 80s looking sort of squared off car. And yeah, you can have a debate all day long about whether it is actually a coupe, but I think it is, really. I think it's a comfortable coupe for gentlemen of a certain age like you and me, David.
Well, you just keep that to yourself. I'm just a young thing, you know.
Are you really?
Yeah, I'm just gonna look at this Accord EX to see if it basically tallies with my memory of it.
Oh, right.
Yes, it does. It used to be in the 80s. I lived in a leafy part of Glasgow because all I could find. It was too blooming expensive, but never mind. And I used to walk down to university and take me past a Honda dealer that's sadly no longer there. And there used to be several of these vehicles lining the roads. And yeah, they did look good. Even to a young man as I then was, I thought, oh, that's quite a nice looking car. I'm just trying to remember if that was the actual model, because, you know, it's not yesterday. It's a couple of weeks ago, obviously.
Yeah,
short-term memory ain't what it used to be. But yeah, very, very nice cars indeed. So I think we'll have to let you off with that one.
Let you
off, that's it.
Crying out loud.
That's it. I'm just following the instructions that you didn't write here. Yeah. You know? Yeah, we'll let you off with that one. I'm in the doghouse because I again broke the rules, which is becoming something of a tradition now.
Yeah.
But yeah, what the heck? I mean, you ran off with another countess last week, so if you can do that.
Countess Yoko, even. Yeah, that's right. And she may come between us, David. You know, break up the band, but there you go.
I wish I could think of a witty reply to that, but I can't. Yeah, unfortunately, no. Anyway, on that note, we'll take a quick break.
This is Bangers and Classics, presented by Spencer and Eddie.
We're back for the last segment of the podcast, and we're now going to talk about a car that belonged to one of Mr. Ruppert's matinee idols when he was a boy.
Oh, yeah.
James Dean. He hasn't worked out without yet. He's not done the mass, folks. James Dean, of course, you know, only made 3 major movies in Hollywood, and I believe he was posthumously nominated for Oscars for 2 of them. But anyway, he just finished his final film, Giant, and he'd taken delivery of a Porsche 550 Spyder. And well, it didn't end too well for him. Do you know anything about the story of James Dean and this car, James? Is that one coming?
Strangely enough, I do have, and I did look for it last evening, but I couldn't find it because I've got a lot of disruption going on at my place. But I had a French comic which dealt with his final hours, strangely enough, and it's all in French. And considering you've been interviewed by a French magazine, maybe you could translate it for me, David.
Sur le pont d'Avignon, on y donc, etc.
Pretty much. Yeah. So that details what actually happened to him. And I do have some other books on James Dean, which I looked at, and there's all sorts of theories and things about was he wearing his glasses, which I think was one of them. And actually, the only other sort of stuff I know is that I think a few years ago, I think it was parts from his car, of the wrecked car, when they got reused in other cars, things didn't go well for those other cars. But you may be going to tell us that, David.
Well, not really, because I think we might save that one for Halloween. The whole alleged story, because it does require a bit of checking out to see how much of it holds water. But on this day, Dean was traveling 300 miles from LA to participate in a local race. It was his first with the 550. And he had in the car with him a Porsche mechanic who had suggested that instead of trailering it up to where the race was being held, that he drive it to help run it in. Dean had already had a couple of minor biffs with the car in little more than a week in Los Angeles. He wasn't terribly used to it and its handling as yet. But in any event, he travels cross country. There's a support car following him, which I believe was a Ford station wagon, in which was our old friend, because we've mentioned him in the podcast before, in connection with Bullet and other movies, Bill Hickman. But Hickman wasn't a witness to the accident because he was travelling some minutes behind Dean. Obviously, his car was considerably slower than Dean's Porsche 550. But speed probably played a part in this accident because at a previous stop, Dean had met somebody else involved in racing, and had told them he'd had up to 120 in that road that day. It seems that, according to some information that I saw, that he must have been travelling well over 100 average after his final stop to the locus of the crash. Now, I'm not saying he was travelling at that speed when the crash happened, but if the timings are right, he was going at what we'd call in Scotland a fair scud. Anyway, he's coming along the road. He's heading, I think, westwards at this point, and there's a chap coming the other way in, you know, a somewhat more robustly body car, another Ford. The name of this chap, and this is not a made-up name, was Donald Turnipseed. You may think we're making this up. It's not. Mr. Turnipseed was a 23-year-old student who was coming home. His car apparently had been rotted a little bit. And the coming along the road, it's not a dual carriageway. It's a single carriageway road. Turnipseed makes the river cross the road to make a turn to go onto the road to take him home. Obviously, either misjudges the speed of Dean's car, I doesn't see it properly because it's a low car, it's getting towards twilight, and the two cars collide. Turnipseed's car is fairly badly damaged at the front corner, but his injuries are relatively minor. And Dean, however, is killed. He's not wearing a safety belt. His passenger in the car is quite badly injured. He's ejected from it, the German chap, but Dean was trapped in it and unfortunately passed away at the scene. So that's the first part of the story. That's what happened to James Dean. It says 1955. Now, his car was then sold. It's quite ghoulish. There was obviously a bit of competition for this. It seems to have been bought by a doctor who stripped some of the parts of the engine, transaxle, and various other bits and bobs. And those were sold to other people or used himself. And the body, the wrecked body, went to a chap called Barris, who was self-styled king of the hot rodders. He loaned it to the National Safety Council, who then used it at exhibitions to show the effects of driving too quickly. Though when you actually look at the car that was displayed by the National Safety Council, obviously it had been tidied up a great deal and the new panels had been put on it, because it's considerably less wrecked looking than the actual car that Dean perished in. And then the mystery happens. In around about 1960, the car vanishes. Now, some people thought Barris had, this was a publicity stunt or some sort of scam he was working. It was up to no good. But well, there's any truth in that, I can't say. That was one of the theories at the time. But the car has never been found. It's gone. What was left of it anyway? Some of the parts, were used in other cars, and they may have been involved in accidents, including fatal accidents. It's kind of like the ghost of Flight 401. If you know that story that parts from a Lockheed TriStar that crashed in the Florida Everglades, and I think it was 73 or 74, were used, on other planes, and that Ghost was seen in those planes. Well, this is kind of similar in that the parts were said to be jinxed. But be that as it may, the body shell itself vanished. But last year, the actual transactional, now they verified this through serial numbers, but the transactional from Dean's car sold at auction. And can you guess how much it went for, James? Just a transactional.
That's right. Though I don't know, you know, like 20. Well, no, two. You know, $1,000.
$382,000. Yeah, that was last year. It was purchased by, of all places, the Haunted Museum, which I believe is in Los Angeles. Told us run by a guy called Zach Bagans, who appears in some of these ghost programs in America. But he's got it now. The car itself. There's an interesting story there. A few years ago, a chap came forward to say that he thinks he knows where it is. He's pretty sure it was boarded up in a sort of false wall at a house, or at a premises anyway, in Washington State in America. But he ain't going to tell anyone unless he gets $1 million. That's apparently, well, it's apparently there's a reward for it.
Really?
Yeah. I think an auto museum offered $1 million reward for return or for finding of what's left of the car. So keep your eyes peeled, because there may be some developments on this. Even 6 years down the line, negotiations can be very slow. Yeah. And you know, what's left of it. It's pretty ghoulish, though, I have to say.
Yeah.
But that's it. We may tell the story of the parts, etc. If we're still going this coming Halloween, well, we may well include that in the list of spooky stories we tell, because it's quite interesting. But obviously that's subject to actually checking the things out, because we wouldn't want to mislead you in Bangers and Classics. We mislead ourselves enough, let's face it, don't we, James?
Well, we do, absolutely. I'm glad that you're going to do some extensive research. Does that mean we'll have to go to America at some point? That'd be good.
I don't like flying, James.
Don't you? No.
Yes. It's a bit of a swim, you know. Yeah. I mean, a friend of mine rode there.
Yeah.
You know, he did. He was rowing across to Aaron to a party, but missed and ended up in Massachusetts.
Oh, right.
No, that's not true either. I just make all some rubbish up. Well, there we go. Anyway, so we have one final thing to do. We'll move on from James Dean to somebody who is slightly more contemporary, and that's dear old Eddie Shoestring. You must remember him, James.
I've never seen an episode in my life, David.
You are kidding me on.
No, I'm absolutely. It is true. I haven't seen it. I am aware of it. I know the actor who played him, and I've never seen an episode. So
I am shocked.
I know what it's all about. But then I tell you what, a lot of people said to me about certain things in the 1980s. But I tell you, I was out doing things in the 1980s. I was having a ball. And I wasn't watching TV.
this is where the disparity in our ages comes in, because I was younger, and of course this was 1979, the first series, I think.
Oh, was it? Oh, yeah. Shoestring. Oh, yeah. No, I was definitely out and about then. Yeah.
And
sorry.
Oh, crikey! What was the chap's name? Leslie Crowther's daughter appears in it.
Oh right.
She's got a role in it as well. There's also a Renault 14 that appears in several episodes, which of course I'm sure that anyone who likes fairly obscure little French cars, but I quite like the Renault 14 myself. Check that out. Check out Shoestring, because you'll get to see a 14 in its heyday before it rusted away.
Absolutely. I did do a little search online, and there is actually there's a car chase involving some old 70s cars and crashes and stuff. Yeah.
Is one of them a Ford Cortina Estate, a red Ford
Cortina
Estate?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, this is, well, that's what Eddie had. He had an old red Ford Cortina Estate, which wasn't in the best condition, but Eddie wasn't a picture of sartorial elegance. And if you're wondering who this Eddie Shoestring is, it was a TV series about a chap who'd been a computer programmer or computer analyst who'd had some form of mental health problems and had become a private detective who appeared on the radio. And played by Trevor Eve. And it was a great series. I thoroughly enjoyed it. But it's great fun. It's set in Bristol, the fictitious Radio West, and lots of little landmarks and stuff. And it's nicely quirky. And Trevor Eve plays the character. He's a very engaging character as Eddie Shoestring. What I was wondering was, if they were ever to remake this, and probably would never happen, but if they were to, what kind of car would we get for Eddie? I mean, they might come to Bangers and Classics and say, well, guys, we've tried everybody else. And we're really desperate. There's nobody else to turn to. So you're kind of, you know, the last people on the phone book. What can you recommend as a car for Eddie Shoestring? So, I don't know about you, James. I've got one from, but I don't know about you.
Well, yeah, because I saw the Cortina, and actually there's another avenue to go down about TV companies asking your advice, and that has happened to me a few times, and they're just nightmares to deal with, so it's best not to, or it's best to recommend things and get paid for messing them about, because they mess you about. Anyway, because he had the old Cortina, the modern day equivalent, or the modern-ish day equivalent, would be a Mondeo, and I would say a Mondeo 2 would be a sort of a down at hill, but actually quite a nice car to have if you were running about. And the important thing to remember, people, is if you are private eyeing, it's better to have a car that's fairly anonymous.
Mm.
A Mondeo, and still a Mark II, I think, would get away with that. But it would certainly be cheap to buy and run. But whether you disagree with that, because you're the shoestring expert, David, and I'm just an interloper at this point.
No, I am used to running things on a shoestring, James. Let's be honest. That's it. Well, I did look at Mondeos and I did think about it. I thought, well, so we're kind of in the same page there. Mm. But I thought, well, there aren't really any suitable fours because either too old, even for shoestring, because then they've moved from bangers to classics. We don't want that. Shoestring has to drive a banger.
He does.
Yeah. All are too expensive because Eddie probably doesn't have a vast amount of money.
No.
So I had to leave Fords behind.
Yeah.
But I did find him a car.
All right.
It's a 2007, so getting towards banger stage. Mm. It's a 2007 Vauxhall Vectra diesel estate with a 1.9 litre engine, automatic box, seems to have an MOT, and you can 285,000 miles.
Goodness me.
It's got a very short MOT, I have to say, but it has got one. And it could be his for £695, but there's probably a bit of room to manoeuvre there as well.
Yeah.
And it looks suitably shabby that somebody like Eddie would drive, but also suitably nondescript.
Mm.
You're not going to pick one of those out and say, aha!
No, that's right.
It's the ideal car for a bit of covert surveillance.
Yeah.
So that's what I went for. So there we go. So we've got Mark II Mondeo or a 2007 Vauxhall Vectra, which would be a Vectra Mark III, the last of the Vectras. I did think of an Insignia, but they're too expensive. And I don't like them anyway very much. So we'll just go with a Vectra. So there we go. That's Eddie sorted out. You can take his pick between those two cars and we'll send our bill to the BBC or whoever's making the series.
Exactly.
Yes. I think that's about it. Anything else you've got to add to this week's pod, James?
No, not really, David. I've got to go and do things.
he's got better things to do than talk to us, listeners. I do apologise. You can't take him anywhere. But on that somewhat sombre note, I'll say thank you very much for listening. We're now into our second year.
Are we?
Yes, apparently so. Oh, yes, right. Yes. James is obviously having such a good time. He's forgotten. Yeah.
Well, all I know, David, is that we're still in 1980, according to our timeline, apparently, aren't we? So, yeah.
Yes, well, we started in 1979.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
So, obviously, we're current with Eddie, but we're kind of using our time machine and our crystal ball to look into the future when we may later on be asked for this information.
Yeah, okay.
That's my explanation for it. It's the usual rambling nonsense, but you come to expect that. Anyway, thanks again, folks. Hopefully you tune in next time.
Yeah, thanks for turning up. We appreciate it.